Roger Green, host of the Surfing the Mesh Tsunami podcast. This week, we're offering 6 conversations from episode 7, where we join 5 leading North American patient advocates to celebrate the approval of Rezdiffra on March 14th, 2024, and to discuss some implications for patients and other stakeholders. This conversation focuses on how the role of advocate might change and expand in the aftermath of Rezdiffra's approval. To Wayne Eskridge, the approval raises, and I quote, an entirely new field of education and outreach, end of quote, because now advocates can do more than merely be supportive emotionally for their patients. Advocates can, quoting Wayne again, refresh our message and have broader perspectives and share a more hopeful outlook to the future, end of quote, and talk about clinical trial participation and other drugs coming down the line. Also, he notes, advocates can provide the education to bring new patients into the system and help deliver the information providers will need to know in order to treat them. Jeff McIntyre adds that this will raise a new set of questions for advocates to ask companies and the healthcare system alike in terms of support for patients with cirrhosis, more patient-friendly dosing, better reimbursement, a range of issues. I shift focus to ask how advocates can help slow the flow of patients into the disease process, or as I put it, water down the hose. Tony Milioti says education is key and notes how NASH knowledge starts by educating children. Jen Jones adds that education and promotion can give hope to patients with alcohol-related liver disease and those with the new category MetALD. She also notes from personal experience that the label gives advocates new leverage to stress the importance of nutrition and physical activity, since many other drugs do not have that listed as an adjunct in the label. In episodes 6 and 7, we have now spoken to 2 of the groups most directly engaged in activities leading to and emanating from the Rezdiffra approval. This group of patient advocates is energized, optimistic, and brimming with new ideas. So just sit back, listen, enjoy, learn, and when you're done, join the dialogue in our LinkedIn discussion group. So what next, folks? How's this going to change what any of you are going to do starting tomorrow?
Wayne Eskridge.
You know, it raises an entirely new field of education and outreach. You know, one of the problems we have had historically is because there was nothing to say other than be supportive, it was very difficult in engaging with the patient community because these are largely sick people that are just desperate for something. And a lot of times we just end up being sympathetic and holding their hand and letting people know that we're there. But this allows us to change the nature of the dialogue, I think. And it's not that everybody's going to be able to get the drug, you know. Like I said, I can't get it because I'm an F4. But it still changes the flavor of the kinds of things that we can communicate to the patient community. And I think that gives us as advocates an opportunity to refresh our message and have broader perspectives and have more hopeful outlook to the future, because it really does give us the springboard from which we can talk about the other drugs coming down the line. It gives us good ammunition to encourage people to participate in the new clinical trials that are coming along. You know, our access to the pharma companies that are building things should improve, because hopefully they see the value that patient advocacy has brought to this event. And the investor community, I've been kind of surprised. I've had a couple of calls from investor groups that were curious as to, from a patient perspective, what did we think about this drug? And this is going to, you know, it just creates a more fertile environment for us in terms of the kinds of things that we can talk about and use as ways to educate the population and the doctors. You know, we participate in some CME things for docs. When they get past this 315,000, you know, and they start to really try to educate the primary care docs and that broader field, there's going to be a lot of activity that takes place because of this. And, you know, that's going to benefit the patient advocate community, because they're going to want us to help them. If we talk about it well as we go through the next year, the industry should develop a more robust appreciation for the value that patient advocates bring to the party.
Everyone's nodding. Jeff, you looked like you wanted to say something a minute ago, but I might have misread your face, because sometimes your face is slower than your mind on the screen.
Jeff McIntyre.
Oh, boy, isn't that the story of my life?
That's not good.
It just means you need faster bandwidth, my friend. Go ahead.
Roger, we got a face made for podcasts here. Thank you, sir. I'm just kind of acknowledging, you know, the truth in what Wayne is saying and kind of thinking of, you know, he's given great examples here as a NASH patient, you know, and it's interesting to me because I think Wayne as an F4 patient doesn't have access to this drug right now. And so does that mean that in the future that an F4 patient wouldn't have access to this drug? It means now that we have approval, now these are the sort of questions we can begin to ask. We can start asking questions around dosage. We can start asking questions about reimbursement. I mean, there's incredible precedents that have been set here, but I think, you know, it also allows patients now to move to the next level of inquiry in terms of, okay, what's next? Let's talk about progress. It's not just kind of this metaphysical sort of hope for things that will happen, but we've got real tangible things now that we can attach questions to get hopefully some really great deliverables off of. And so it's mostly just nodding in agreement with where Wayne is.
You collectively all are raising an interesting question, or at least I'm taking an interesting question from this. Our question, I think, is interesting. I'll keep stepping back until I completely minimize. But, you know, one of the metaphors, one of the visualizations I always have for disease, and particularly this disease, is if you want to stop the flow of patients into a disease where incidence is growing rapidly, it's a little bit like trying to put your foot on a hose. You're right. You can't stop what's in the hose already, but maybe you can lessen what gets into those. So here you can see that working two or three ways, which is, will the number of patients coming into F2 and F3, will enough of them be treated so that fewer people will get to cirrhosis? I mean, one possibility is we'll treat, but the rate of people coming in will outstrip our ability to treat, and as a result, cirrhosis will still grow, but more slowly. Second one is, we're going to be able to treat enough people that there will be less cirrhosis 5 years from now, picking a date, point in time. Similar question about work that, I mean, advocates have been advocating for patients, but the largest patient population right now are the untreated, right? In fact, the undiagnosed. So I'm wondering how you folks see the work that your different organizations do in terms of helping find a path for the undiagnosed to become diagnosed, because if you really want to put a foot on the fire hose, that's where the foot's got to be. So is that in anybody's plans, or what are you doing to do that now?
Tony Viliotti.
Yeah, that certainly impacts us, because most of what we do is working with that untreated population. I mean, we go out and talk with the general public about liver health, about fatty liver disease, and so forth. And 99% of the people we talk to are not in the treated population. And for that population, it won't affect a whole lot of what we talk about, in a sense that, you know, they're not to the point where they need it to start talking about a drug. I mean, they just need to be aware if they're at risk, and we try to drive them to increase their awareness of their liver, how to keep it healthy, you know, what the actions they're taking that are negatively impacting their liver, and then if they are at risk, encourage them to get into the healthcare system. So that's kind of the population that most of what we do is actually aimed at. I mean, we start with the children, just trying to impress upon them, you know, the importance of good liver health, hoping that also extends into the adults in the family as well. You know, we do talk to patients, you know, provide resources. We run a support group, and, you know, we'll certainly have the same issues that others do in providing information and, you know, guidance as to how to get into the Madrigal with those people. But a lot of what we do is working with that untreated population.
So Jen, your work's a little different in some ways. How does the untreated population relate to what you do, and to what degree is liver awareness a key to what you do with that population?
Jen Jones.
Well, I was having some thoughts about this as Tony was talking and Jeff and Wayne, and I was listening to them, and I thought I had, number one, outside of sober livers and some of the work that we want to do, is, and when Resdifra, if they decide to advertise or start putting it out there, and people realize that there is a drug on the market for liver disease, my idea is that people are going to start asking their doctors to find out if they have liver disease, where they didn't do that before, because there is something that may be able to be done for them, regardless if they find out they just have steatotic liver disease. Well, guess what? We're catching it in time where you don't need a drug yet. You know, you can make some lifestyle adjustments and we can work on this individually. And I foresee this as being a good opportunity for people to become more aware of liver disease itself. And then secondly, for the population that I'm working with, which includes a new category of MET-ALD, I really could see this expansion of this drug easily falling into this group. And if you look at what who possibly may come into this group, when I'm looking at numbers of people with alcohol-associated liver disease, and I'm looking at diabetes and obesity information with this group, it's hitting around 70-75%. So you better believe a lot of people who have been diagnosed with alcohol-associated liver disease actually will be in this category. And I see this as a natural pathway for this drug as being one of the easier ones for it to go to next. So educating the community about this when we're having our virtual groups, when I'm doing other types of promotional efforts for liver health and helping people to realize, you know, let's figure out where you're at. Let's know where your liver is. And I think that that's going to be key. And I just think just having this in our back pocket as a tool saying, look, there's something out there. So let's get you tested. I'm all about early detection, especially with alcohol-associated liver disease, because that can put you in treatment. And then the other thing I will say, because I find it, I'll bring it back to having it in conjunction with lifestyle changes and diet changes. You know, I take medication for anxiety. I take medication for depression. And nowhere on that label does it say I should use in conjunction with therapy. And I think that this really does open the doors for the FDA to think about this in a more broader picture of what we can promote to really treat some of these other comorbid conditions that are out there, or concurrent conditions.
Hey, Jen, that's fantastic. I'm old enough that I never hear a truly original thought anymore, but that was one. Thank you very much for that.
And now, back to Roger.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. If you have any questions or comments about the content of this conversation or the entire episode, please put them in the review section of the page from which you downloaded this conversation, or send an email to questions@surfingmash.com. We're still working on next week's topic, but it will be a good one. All the options are great. Until then, stay safe, surf on, see you on the podcast. Bye-bye now.